been a week. Tell me, how is everything? Did you remember to sleep? What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some art.
And welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, proudly brought to you this January thanks to Shoreside Theatre with Shakespeare in the Park. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and find us on Spotify. Tonight we're chatting with the team from Shoreside's Shakespeare in the Parks, with the team from Taming of the Shrew and Richard III joining us. But first, to kick off the show, here's Lego People from the band The Lobsters, who were part of Play It Strange 2024's songwriting competition. January's flying by too fast, Emma.
I know, we're already at week two.
Week two. Now, we're pre-recording this one because I'm away, so at the time of this going to you, will actually be flying home just for a couple of days in Melbourne to catch some shows. So I'll chat to you about that next week. But it was a perfect show to pre-record because it's with our friends from Shakespeare in the Park.
Yeah, and we were able to give them the whole show because they've, of course, got two productions happening.
Yeah, really cool. Did you do much Shakespeare yourself in the years? Like, I remember a little bit at college.
It was interesting. I actually disliked Shakespeare in high school. I think that was because I had a couple of English teachers who used to make us sit in our desks and read it. And for someone that wasn't a good reader and was a slow processor, I found that really hard. Then, I mean, I did have a theatre teacher who did great Shakespeare's, and they were kind of, I liked them. I got them, but then English would bring me down. And it wasn't till actually I became a drama teacher, I did a Shakespeare intensive with Jonathan Hendry, or Jonty, and he really brought it back to life with some really amazing exercises and really helped to decode the language. And now it's a favourite. And in fact, while I was at St. Kentigan, some of my best shows, I think, were my, I mean, what did I do? Romeo and Juliet, Othello, Midsummer Night's Dream.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, see, it never really rocked my boat at all, other than I remember seeing or being involved in the technical of a group that hired the Playhouse Theatre and did Midsummer Night's Dream really well. But then I went and saw Shakespeare at the Globe in London, and suddenly you were like, ah, this is good Shakespeare. So, yeah, it's funny, but it has quite a following. Like our cast that we'll chat to tonight, I'm sure Shakespeare's been a huge part of their world.
Yeah, and I think it's either done well or if it's done really badly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And sometimes there's some things in between. But, you know, I think the experience, especially with the whole outdoor, in fact, I saw someone post the other day, oh, it was our friend Matua Jeff Allen from Pitt Street Theatre and Belmont was, because he used to be a big part of the University Shakespeare in the Park, which, of course, Michael Hirst used to really regularly do. And someone was saying that University Shakespeare in the Park should come back.
Right.
You know, because that was quite an iconic thing as well.
Yeah, yeah. We need to pass it on to Stray Theatre. Maybe they need to look at it.
Well, in fact, good that you should say that, because Jeff actually said that he was talking to Stray Theatre about doing some stuff with Pitt Street and Shakespeare.
Brilliant. All right, well, let's head over to the North Shore and catch up with our first guests.
Joining us on Kick Arts, all the way from the Pump House, in fact, the Pump House Amphitheatre, is first team from Shakespeare in the Park 2025 from Taming of the Shrew. Now, Mags was meant to join us, but we're having a few technical issues. But in the meantime, we've got two of the fabulous actors, Matilda and Heather. Kia ora, girls.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. Nice to meet you.
Same back at you. It's lovely to have new people on Kick Arts for the top of the year. So let's start with you, Heather. Tell us, first of all, for anyone that doesn't know Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew, tell us kind of in a snapshot how you would promote this out to the ether.
Ooh, how I'd promote it?
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the synopsis. What is it all about?
Love.
Love?
And marriage, sort of. There are two sisters, and the youngest one has lots of suitors fawning after her. That's Bianca. You know, she's very, very sweet and lovely, and so everyone's after her. Her oldest sister is perhaps, could I say, a little scratchy, perhaps, Matilda? Is that fair?
That's a good description of her, yes.
But their father, or in our case, mother, Baptista, makes a rule that until the older sister is married, the younger sister will not be allowed to be wooed and married. So enter Petruchio, my character, who is happy to help everyone out by wooing Caterina, who turns out to be, in fact, quite lovely.
Fantastic. Now, you're doing it as an all-female version, is that right?
Mm.
So does that mean you have gender-swapped some of the characters?
Mostly no, only the mother, I believe.
Yeah, so Heather is playing Petruchio as a male character.
Mm.
So that's quite different for Shakespeare's time, where, of course, it was all the males were playing females, to have a full female cast.
Yes, yeah, full reversal.
Cool.
And is this your first venture into Shakespeare, or are you no stranger to Shakespeare?
I'm not a stranger to Shakespeare. I've done a few in the past. This is actually my second time doing Taming of the Shrew.
Ah.
So I played a different character last time, and that was over in London. And apart from that, I've done Much Ado About Nothing and The Tempest. I don't think I've done any of the tragedies yet. I seem to keep picking up comedy roles.
So, Matilda, tell us a little bit about your character.
Well, my character is Catherine, whom Heather's character, Petruchio, woos. I start off a bit abrasive, a bit snappy, but we've set it up so that there's a reason for her to be that way. She's not mean for the sake of being mean. And as the play progresses, you see her walls start coming down and she starts warming up to Petruchio, and you see that she actually has quite a soft and gentle center. And yeah, you see that dynamic starting to form between Catherine and Petruchio, which she may not show with everyone else.
Fantastic. I can see Mags is trying to butt into our interview. Mags, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes. We can, Mags. Welcome to the interview, Miss Director.
Hello.
So we've just been hearing a little bit about the story, and Matilda was just telling us a little bit about her character. So, Matilda, is this your first time with Shakespeare in the Park?
Yes, it is, actually. This is my first foray into Shakespeare outside of school. I've done, like, little scenes from Anthony and Cleopatra and from the Scottish play while I was in school, but this is the first time that I'm doing an entire play, which is really exciting.
Now, Mags, how many times have you done Shakespeare in the Park, or Shakespeare as a general? We might have lost Mags again. We've lost Mags. This is going to be a very interesting interview with Mags coming in and out. So we'll go back to Matilda and Heather. So have rehearsals started?
Oh, yes. We've been rehearsing since
September,
October? No, was it later than that? But definitely a few
months.
A couple months last year. Yeah.
I think it's like around either August or October, I think.
So since Mags can't speak, you can tell us, what is her directing style like? How would you describe Mags as a director of this?
I think in terms of, like, overall vision, she is specific in what she wants. But in terms of, like, characterization, she lets us play first before she goes, like, okay, maybe adjust this and adjust that, which is really nice. She just lets us go wild. And she says, maybe that works, maybe that doesn't.
But she also has a plan and the overview.
Yeah.
Right. How does it work? Because you're obviously probably rehearsing indoors, but you're going to be performing outdoors. So what does that mean for you guys during rehearsals? What do you have to maybe consider?
Well, we started rehearsing indoors, but we moved to the amphitheater back in November last year. One of the main things that I guess I didn't register was how the weather really affects everything.
Yeah.
Like when it rains, like, because there's a lot of movement through the play. We have to be careful where we, like, how fast we move, where we go, because we don't want to stack it as we're exiting or entering for a scene.
Is there much through the audience action going on in the amphitheater?
Through the audience. Well, most of the entrances and exits are through the audience. So, yes. Yeah, there's plenty of kind of discussing as we're heading through, a few conversations if you're lucky. might get a moment with one of the characters coming to seek help from you.
So, Heather, who do you think the show will appeal to in this modern world today? Who's going to be someone that's going to come and really enjoy this?
Well, it's really funny. So, honestly, I think most people can appreciate a comedy like that. I think theatre, and particularly, you know, something as special as outdoor theatre in an amphitheatre, is just such a great experience overall. Genuinely, I think if you're, even if you don't frequently go to the theatre, it's such a fantastic experience, such a great thing to come out in the summer and just, you know, take in a story under the sky. I think anyone can come and enjoy this. I think young people should come and enjoy it, as well as some of the older ones who might have more experience of Shakespeare's stories.
And given it is Auckland with four seasons in one day, have you sort of got directed plans around anything you have to shift or move if, you know, halfway through the performance it starts raining?
Do you know, Matilda? This would be a good one for Mags.
This is a good Mags question. And I vaguely remember her saying, even if it does rain, we'll just continue on.
Yeah, the audience can get their umbrellas out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the stage actually has a little bit of a roof, so we might just, you know, shuffle back a little bit.
I'm sure we'll be there.
Yeah, and I'm sure anyone going to outdoor theatre in Auckland is sensible enough to take their jacket with them.
Yeah. How about we take a music break and we'll unpack Heather and Matilda's arts journey after this break.
Four seasons in one day, lying in the depths of your imagination, worlds above and worlds below. Sun shines on the black clouds hanging over the domain. Even when you're feeling warm, the temperature could drop away. Like four seasons in one day. Smiling as the shit comes down, you can tell a man from what he has to say. Everything gets turned around, and I will risk my neck again, again. You can take me where you will, up the creek and through the mill. Like all the things you can't explain, seasons in one day. Blood dries up like rain fills my cup. Like all seasons in one day. Predictions, sleeping on an unmade bed, finding out wherever there is comfort, there is pain. Only one step away, like four seasons in one day. Blood.
Welcome back. Now we're chatting to the fabulous cast from Taming of the Shrew, Shakespeare's comedy, because we often think of Shakespeare as all kind of the serious stuff, but you're so right, Heather, this is one that people can come and enjoy and have a laugh. Now, you've mentioned that you're no stranger to Shakespeare, but tell us a little bit about your arts journey. When did it all begin? Take us back.
Ooh, it would have begun in school, and I think I first got inspired to want to get on the stage by watching, you know, school plays. Like when I was a junior, I have some older siblings, so particularly if they were in a show, I would go and watch that, and it just all seemed so much fun, and they all seemed so cool on the stage, in their characters, having a great time. So I started taking drama right from year nine, and had an awesome teacher, Ms. Willens. If you are out there, you were an inspiration. and Then from school, I went straight into Unitech and did the course there. To be honest, at that time, I loved performing, but I feel like I didn't kind of get it. Like, I didn't have the passion for kind of theatre as like an overall topic and like what you can really achieve with it, kind of the magic of like live performance and what you can do on the stage. And I found that a little bit later when I moved to London for a few years and just explored a lot more there, which I don't think you need to. We've got awesome theatre in New Zealand. It was just sort of how it happened for me. And I, while I was over there, just got way more immersed and interested in just, you know, theatrical stories and opportunities and the different ways that you can... Yeah, storytell and impact people and, you know, kind of create change even through theatre or just to, like, really uplift people and give them a magical experience. So that was... And then I did kind of various productions over in London, particularly, yeah, hit a few Shakespeare opportunities, which was really, really fun. I did some awesome, like, festivals. And then I moved to semi-rural Japan for a few years, so that took a little bit of a break. And then since coming back to New Zealand, I recently got back on the stage kind of for the first time with Pride and Prejudice, which was also at the Pump House. And this has followed on the tail of that, which, it's been really, really fun just being on the stage again, being in the rehearsal room again. There is just so much, like, laughter and enjoyment in the rehearsal room and getting to throw myself into some quite different characters because I was Charlotte Lucas in Pride and Prejudice, which is a fairly sort of relatively demure, you know, she knows her mind, but relatively demure character, whereas Petruchio is pretty out there.
And... Of course, in London, they're kind of no stranger to outdoor theatre. It's kind of quite a lot more popular probably than it is here. Like, we have the odd show outdoor, but London feels like it has a lot more.
Yes. Yeah, I was. It also, I think, has a lot more theatres overall. But yes, outdoor theatre is probably has more of a tradition there. In fact, the Much Ado About Nothing that I did there was in a garden as well. Not as well, but also outdoor. It's just lovely as like a summer activity. But at the same time, when I had the opportunity to audition for Shakespeare in the Park, I was like, that is so exciting because it's iconic. It's that I think I've heard this is its 29th year maybe, and that's so cool as something to be a part of. It's like there's a legacy there just about.
Awesome, Gilda, tell us about your journey.
Well, my journey, I actually grew up in Myanmar, which is a country in Southeast Asia, and I did drama there, but drama in school there was more literary analysis than actually performing. And when I was about 13, I asked my drama teacher if we could perform a play instead of just studying it, and she told me no. And that no basically kind of, I guess it's spurred my interest in theater. Like, it was born out of spite, I suppose. Like, when my family moved from Myanmar to East Auckland, I actually spent some of my teenage years out in the Bucklands Beach area. And when I found out I could do drama there as a performance-based subject rather than just literary analysis, I was like, I'm jumping straight into this with two feet. And from there, my love for theater grew into a love for musical theater as well, because while I was in school here, I auditioned for our school production of The Wizard of Oz. I was a munchkin, which is hilarious because I'm only 5 feet tall, but they had me on my knees anyway in a huge hoop skirt. Doing my very first musical here as a kid inspired me to do a musical theater degree. When I moved back to Singapore, I did a three-year degree with LaSalle College of the Arts. When I graduated, I think I actually went into it a bit too young. I probably should have had a bit more life experience first before going into that musical theater degree, because when I graduated, I was like, I'm not really sure if this is for me. And then I went into stage management for a little while, and then props making, and then doing a lot of backstage stuff as well. But over the years, I kept finding myself coming back to performing. I would look up auditions even when I knew I couldn't go for an audition. But I would still look it up and be like, what roles can I go for? So when I moved back to Auckland back in 2023, that's kind of what I did. I started looking at auditions again and going for as many things as possible. Yeah.
Is there a dream role, Matilda, and I'm going to ask you as well, Heather, is there a dream role that you're waiting and you would like jump to audition for the second you see it come out? And you can't say this one, has to be something in the future.
Oh, yeah, I definitely do have a dream role. I would love to audition for either Persephone or any of the Fates from Hadestown. They're just such great characters. Although I think I may still be a little bit too young for Persephone. I don't know. Get a bit more life experience first.
Is it, before we jump over to Heather, is it, Matilda, is it more musicals or plays then? Because obviously Taming of the Shrew is a play, but you've just mentioned that your dream role is something from a musical.
I love both. If I could just keep doing musicals and plays, like, until people tell me, like, go away, we've seen enough of you, I would keep going. I just love it.
Very cool. All right.
Heather, dream role?
Yeah, likewise. Really love Shakespeare. Really love musicals. There must be a hidden connection there. Maybe it's the verse, like the rhythm.
Probably.
As far as Shakespeare, if anyone's doing Much Ado About Nothing anytime soon, Beatrice is just like peak Shakespearean heroine. I just leave that there. I'd love to play Captain Beverly in Come From Away.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That'd be cool.
It's quite site-specific. Like, I don't know if we do that in New Zealand. Like, I don't know how it would go down because it's...
It's happening. The premiere of the amateur rights of Come From Away are now available, and Showbiz Christchurch are doing it in a couple of months, and then it's being done in four different cities in New Zealand this year. So it is a happening thing.
Watch this space.
I'll keep my eyes out for any auditions. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, Emma, I'm going to ask you now to embody the character of Mags, the director.
Do her accent.
And because while we've been talking, Mags has been busy texting us some answers to some of the questions. So first of all, what we asked the question of what would happen if it rains, and rather than that, there is a specific performance plan.
She said we have a dedicated indoor performance on Sunday the 26th of January at 2 p.m. And this is not only if it rains, this is a dedicated performance for those that don't like sitting on the hard amphitheatre seats. Now, with that in mind, let's tell our listeners who are going to Shakespeare in the Park, take your cushions, because those blooming amphitheatre seats are hard.
Yes, take your cushion. Now, Mags, why did you want to do Taming of the Shrew?
So she said she chose to do Shrew with all females because it does turn the show right around from Shakespeare's day. Okay, that's what we said. Maybe that was why she did it. And she's chosen to emphasise the comedy aspect of the show rather than the perceived versions of the Shrew with Kate succumbing to a male dominance. Oh, so the servants, especially Grumio, is that how you say it? Grumio?
Grumio.
Yep, have a lot of really silly moments.
Oh, and is this your first time, Mags, directing Shakespeare?
No, in fact, it's her second Shakespeare. She directed Comedy of Errors in 2018.
Fantastic.
And there are cushions provided, said Mags. Brilliant. And she doesn't have... she just said she doesn't have an accent. So it's a good thing that I just used my terrible Kiwi one.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us this afternoon. And we're looking forward to always supporting the fabulous team that put on Shakespeare in the Park, the great supporters of Kick Arts. Where can we get tickets from, Emma?
Well, Mags has let us know that we can get tickets on the Pump House website.
And it's running from the 18th of January until February the 15th. And you're even performing on Valentine's Day. So does that mean the audience need to bring you red roses and throw them at the end during the
Please. We won't say no.
Boxes of chocolates are also acceptable.
Any form of roses then. Yeah, quite. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah, and Meg said that chocolates are preferred than roses as well. So there we go. She wants roses chocolate. So
if
don't
you
forget
throwing
that.
Roses, please cut off the thorns.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, health and safety. Fabulous. Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming on and chatting on Kick Arts. All the best with your season.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much.
Now, Matilda mentioned her dream role was from Hadestown. So here is The Chant from the Broadway cast soundtrack of Hadestown.
Now, everybody knows that walls have ears.
Is it true?
Heard what the boy was saying.
Is it true?
Is it true?
It's the boy.
A million tons of stone and steel.
Is it true?
Is it true?
Echoed his refrain.
Oh, keep your head long. Oh, you gotta keep your head long. If you wanna keep your head long. Oh, you gotta keep your head long.
Why do we turn away when our brother is bleeding?
Oh, keep your head.
Why do we build a wall and then call it freedom?
Oh, keep your head.
If we're free, tell me why I can't look in my brother's eye.
Keep your head.
Young man, got to hand it to you. Guess you don't scare easy, do you? Are you brave or stupid, son? Doesn't matter which one, cause it seems your song made quite a strong impression on my wife. But it takes more than singing songs to keep a woman in your arms. Take it from a man no longer young, if you want to hold a woman's son. Hang a chain around her throat, made of many karat gold, shackle her from wrist to wrist, sterling silver bracelets, fill her pockets full of stones, precious ones, diamonds, bind her with a golden band, take it from an old man.
Oh, if I raise my voice,
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 keep your head low,
if I raise my
too, sang a song of love like you. Son, I too was left behind, turned on one too many times. Now I sing a different song, one I can depend upon. A simple tune, a steady beat, the music of machinery. You hear that heavy metal sound, a symphony of ladies' time. And in this symphony of mine, a power chords and power line. Young man, you can strum your lyre.
I have strung the world in wire.
Young man, you can sing your ditty.
I conduct the electric city.
I tell you what, young man, since my wife is such a fan, and since I'm going to count to three and put you out of your misery. One! Give me one more song before I send you to the great beyond where nobody can hear you singing. Three! Sing a song for me. Make me laugh. Make me weep. Make the king feel young again. Sing for an old man.
Well, Well, that was a bit of fun with some technical issues. I suppose that's the thing that when we go live, we don't tend to have those kind of things anymore, do we?
It reminds us of that dreaded time where we did this every week. Yeah.
Online, yeah, definitely. Now tell us, do you have a favourite Shakespeare?
I think Romeo and Juliet I've always enjoyed the most, and I'm not sure if that's just because I really like the characters and the sort of the story behind it, or whether I just understand it better than some of the others.
Do you think you understand it better because of your love of maybe West Side Story?
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely. I think I've also seen some really good versions of it. Never forget one a long time ago at the Herald Theatre, which I think may have been Auckland Theatre Company at its time, that really got me going, and they'd done it in the round, and yeah, I've seen good. I mean, even Titirangi Theatre last year did a very good version of it. So,
what about the movie, like Baz Luhrmann's movie of it?
Yeah, I enjoyed that, and I think it perhaps brought it back to life again on the stage. I've always loved Midsummer Night's Dream just for its magic. It's always a nice magical, feels like an easier watch, perhaps. What about you?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me is bringing that Shakespeare's a timeless. So for me, whenever I've, say, directed one, it's trying to find a new nuance to it. So, for example, when we did Romeo and Juliet, I was in a school that really didn't go for Shakespeare. It was quite a sports-driven school. So we decided to make the Capulets and the Montagues two opposing sports teams.
Brilliant.
And we set it on a hockey field, and we immersed the audience by having bleachers on either side, and you were sitting either on the Montague side, and when you arrived you got your team flag, and we included dance like halftime at the Super Bowl. We had like a moment, so the Bull was halftime at the Super Bowl.
Oh.
Where we had cheerleaders and things like that, and so everyone, all the kids that came, actually really understood it from the point of view of being likewise when I did Midsummer Night's Dream, which was the last one I did at St. Kentigan, instead of them going into the forest, they actually went to the concrete jungle, and it was set in Times Square.
Nice.
And it was in the 80s, so it was all 80s set in Times Square, and it worked really well. You know,
I guess, it's one of those things important to remember too from a copyright point of view, that you've got far more freedom with than a modern musical or a modern play to change.
Mm.
So you can make it yours.
And you don't have to do a full 3.5 hours. You can, of course, cut bits out. So I know a lot of high schools that have done cuts and things. And I think that's what makes it so exciting, like with the University of Otago Sheila Wynne Shakespeare competition every year.
Mm.
You know, trying to do a 15-minute moment is really exciting.
And do it well.
Mm. So should we head back over to Takapuna? Over on the lake, maybe some people have got their picnics ready. I don't know. And check in with the second team from Shakespeare in the Park.
Absolutely. So you're right, Emma. Literally joining us from the amphitheatre on the North Shore now is Kath and the team from Richard III. Welcome to Kick Arts, Kath.
Thanks. Hi, Stephen. How are you doing?
We're great. So you are literally mid-rehearsal, is that right? We've interrupted your day.
You have. You've interrupted a very tense scene between Richard III and Anne while he's trying to woo the woman whose husband and father-in-law he recently killed. So, you know, just there's a few things going on at the moment.
Well, feels like you might have needed the break, to be honest. And our listeners can't see it, but we've just been chatting with Mags and the team from Taming of the Shrew, and one of the conversations we had was about the weather in Auckland. Well, our listeners can't see this, but it's a beautiful day where you're rehearsing today. Great space.
Yes, it's beautiful now. About 2 hours ago, we were all racing for cover, dragging in scripts and props and pizza boxes because we stopped for lunch. And then it's now, and it was beautiful this morning as well. So it's a little bit of four seasons in one day.
Definitely Auckland.
Now, Mags also pointed out, of course, that for Taming of the Shrew, they are having an indoor, one show is programmed to be indoors on the 26th of June for people that find those amphitheatre seats a little uncomfortable. So is it uncomfortable under your bottom at the moment?
Speaking as the oldest member of this group, I would say they aren't the most comfortable, but it is normally a four-hour play, Richard III, and we have cut it reasonably drastically. So it only runs at 2.5 hours, including an interval. So we have scaled it back a little bit. We've taken out a few characters. We've moulded in a few characters. So you are only sitting for around just over 2 hours. And it's so charming here as a venue, as a space. You know, you can kind of you just dig in, I say, and bring a cushion.
Do you have a indoor specific programmed show, though, like Taming of the Shrew do?
Yes, we do. And you're going to ask me what date it is, aren't you?
Not necessarily, people. Jump on the Pump House website, because I'm sure that who is your Anne has made sure that it's on the Pump House website, and I'm sure that will tell them.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, we've got a number of dates. We have 12 shows all in all for Rich III. Same again for Taming of the Shrew. We are just in the process of confirming our indoor date, but absolutely, the website will give you all the information, including the synopsis of both plays. Rich III, in particular, people might know the character, might know or have heard of the play, but perhaps they're a little bit sketchy on the story itself. So there's also a synopsis on the website, so it's all good.
Before we meet your cast, tell us a little bit about that synopsis if someone's not sure about the story.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so Richard III, one of the history plays. Actually, Richard III is the second longest play after Hamlet, but as mentioned earlier, it's been cut. Richard, he's probably 90% of the play. There are some fabulous monologues. He is generally thought to be misunderstood from a historian's point of view. Shakespeare took him and gave him a right royal dressing down. He was the last Plantagenet king, and it was widely considered that he had something to do with the death of two of the princes who were the actual heirs to the throne. This play essentially is about his ascent and descent to the throne, who he kills, maims and murders and woos and dumps along the way. He's exceptionally manipulative, utterly charming, irreverent, evil, and all of these things that Shakespeare needed him to be, because obviously he was writing in the time of a Tudor king. The Tudor king who deposed, essentially, Richard III, who was the last Plantagenet king. So this Plantagenet king had to be everything that was awful. And sure enough, Shakespeare wrote that, and that's what we're going with.
That was a really impressive synopsis. So you've hooked me in. Now you've got wonderful people sitting beside you. Perhaps they could go down the line, introduce who they are in real life and who they're playing and a little bit about their character.
Sure. Shall we start from the top?
Yeah.
Well, hi. My name is Christopher Raven, and I am playing Richard III. I think you've heard plenty about Richard. He's a lot of fun to play at the moment, and I'm really, really delving into his madness and malice, and I'm finding it very enjoyable.
So, Christopher, tell us, you're playing such a formidable character. Whose voice are you taking on with this? Who's your favourite kind of Shakespearean type character that maybe you're emulating using your voice? Or is it just you?
Well, it's a mix of things, because sometimes I put on my more English accent whenever I'm doing Shakespeare, but I tend to follow... I watched Macbeth a few years ago, which Kath also directed. And I just fell in love. I fell in love with the voice, the way that everything worked. And I'm drawing a bit of inspiration from Mark's previous performance as Macbeth. The way his voice is just a bit raspy and he's just manipulative.
Though I can detect a little bit of an accent, though. So does that mean, are you not a New Zealander?
I'm born and raised New Zealand, but my parents are from the UK.
So you've got a little bit of them in you.
Yeah, and I bring it out more here.
Love it. Love it.
Okay, who's next to you, Christopher?
Kia ora. Ko Meg tōku ingoa. I know you both really well. I play Queen Elizabeth. She starts the play as the queen to wife of King Edward, who is Richard's brother.
spoiler, he dies early on. And so my play, my character in the play is spent, she spends most of her time grieving a lot of family and friends. So that's her thing. Yeah.
And keeping it all together, because essentially Richard starts wiping them out. So she is the one that is holding it all together until she kind of does him a little bit of a...
She does him a bit of a dirty.
Towards the end of the play, Richard decides that he's going to marry her daughter just to keep him. The Tudor King is on his way, Richmond. And so she betroths or marries her daughter off to the new Tudor King, which eventually kind of wipes out that little plan of Richard's.
And Meg, this isn't your first Shakespeare in the Park.
No, I've done a few. My first show here, I was playing Titania. Then I played Lady Macbeth. I play high status characters. I play Portia. And also I've done Ugly Shakespeare, which was directed by someone pretty amazing.
Who was that, Meg?
And
what was you? Yeah, to be clear.
What's it like sort of performing in a venue that, you know, you spend your life working and promoting in and it's your space, but now you get to that as well? How cool is that?
It is very cool. I have to make sure that if I have some time away to get in the right headspace when I come back to perform here, because it's very easy to slip into work mindset. Yeah. But it's very cool. And it actually starts to look like a different place when I'm performing here as opposed to when I'm working here in the office.
No. Fabulous. Now, on the other side of Kath, who do we have?
Hiya, I'm Gigi. I play the young Duke of York in this play. I think he's nine-year-old boy, which is quite fun. But I am Meg's character, Queen Elizabeth. I'm her son, and I am the nephew of Richard III. I also have a brother, Prince Edward. So there's quite a bit of like a family sort of situation going on throughout the play. But big spoiler, I'm one of the princes that Kath mentioned at the start who gets killed off by Richard. But it
does it a lot.
He does.
Are you playing me?
Yeah, no. It's good fun to play. And, like, playing a younger kid is quite freeing in a way, I'd say.
So because you get killed off, before you said that, I was about to say, does the young Duke of York become the grand old Duke of York? You know that song? But you get killed. Oh. So you mustn't become the grand old Duke of York.
No, that's probably a different Duke of York. Not sure which one.
Is there a nice dramatic sort of death scenes in this? Like audiences up for a bit of, you know, blood splatter?
Yeah, there definitely are. Not for my character, but there definitely are quite a few. With especially nearer the end, I'd say there are quite a few that are like interesting to watch.
Oh, cool. And is there someone sitting beside you as well?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Viola. I play Lady Anne. I love Lady Anne. I don't know if it's been mentioned, but this is a sort of 1940s setting for this version of Richard III, and it's one of my favorite kind of eras to play in. And Lady Anne gets to have some wonderful big argumentative scenes when Richard III tries to woo her right after she's mourning her husband and father-in-law's death. So it's really fun to play around with that environment and the knives and the guns and all that kind of fun stuff that builds into 1940s and how a woman of that time would react to someone coming around and being like, by the way, rival gang or something killed your people, but I'm here for you. So it's a fun scene and I've really, really enjoyed working on it.
So before we let you get back to rehearsing, I'm going to ask Gigi this question. Gigi, what's it like rehearsing during your summer holidays?
Oh, that's a really good one. Honestly, it's quite fun. Well, I mean, for starters, it gives me something to do, so I'm not spending 2 months at home. But no, it is really cool being able to do it in the summer holidays because it's like we've talked about, the weather is, when it's good, it's really good. And it's pretty cool being able to, like, do it in the amphitheatre, in the open, with, like, gorgeous weather for most of the time. But, yeah, no, it's been a really awesome experience and one that I definitely want to do again.
Christopher, can you tell us what do you think audiences will take from this version of Richard III? What's the point of difference?
I think it's different to your traditional Shakespeare, but it still keeps the essence of what a Shakespeare is. I think it brings a cool twist to it, as we're gangstery, we're fighting with knives, where it's no more swords, it's knives, it's little stabs at people, and it's a lot more mafia warfare.
Love it, love it. All right, we are going to take a music break now, and after the break we're going to chat to Kath about what it's like directing this and find out her arts journey. For the cast, we'll let you have a little break.
So keeping up with the theme of Shakespeare, Stephen, you mentioned that Romeo and Juliet was one of your favourites. Well, one of my favourites from Romeo and Juliet had to be from Baz Luhrmann's 1996 movie version. So this is Desiree with I'm Kissing You.
Mm-hmm.
we're joined now by Kath, the director of Richard III. For those of you that have just tuned in, Richard III across at Pump House, well, Shoreside Theatre's Shakespeare in the Park. So tell us a little bit more, Kath, why the 1940s? What took you down that route?
Well, we had Shoreside's always taken a fairly traditional approach to performing Shakespeare. We're heading into our 30th year of running Shakespeare in the Park. And as I say, we've always had a traditional approach, but this year the committee, Shoreside Committee, decided that they were sort of loosen the reins a bit. Let's see. Our audiences are starting to become a little younger, I guess, especially with the advent of the pop-up globe and, you know, a little bit of profiling of some really great Shakespeare out there. So I think it was sort of like decided that perhaps we should take a look at that, you know, sort of play to perhaps an audience that we haven't traditionally had in the past. So we were given a bit of free rein, and I was approached to direct. I always wanted to direct Richard III. I've seen it a couple of times, and I thought, well, where can we pick it up and place it? And I really looked hard at the sort of the 80s boardroom kind of drama, but couldn't quite make it work because of you also have to take into account that it's not in a traditional theatre space. It's in the amphitheatre, which, for those of you who have never been, it's quite a charming, very rustic, lovely outdoors, right next to Lake Pupuki. It's got this exposed brick, lots of cedar. It's a really charming, rustic place. And to take that sort of 1980s boardroom kind of approach kind of fell flat once we popped it in the space. So I thought, where else can I go with this? Where else can I go with this? So I sort of started looking at the 30s, which has been done. I think Ian McKellen has done a version in the 1930s. And I started looking at Peaky Blinders, which, of course, has been quite popular recently. And then thought, well, maybe if I move it to the 1940s, maybe look at gangs. Were there gangs in the 1940s? My only absolutes were that it needed to be placed in London. I wanted it to be English, and it needed to have some sort of way of making it a real family drama, because Richard III and the Plantagenets are a family that there's some real family toxicity that runs through the Plantagenets. So I really needed it to be family. So I sort of thought mafia. Gangs in the 1940s tend to be sort of quite that sort of Al Capone sort of type thing. So I went looking for it, actually, to see, were there gangs in the 1940s in London? Of course, there were, coming through Peaky Blinders. There were the Cray brothers, who were probably the most well-known, who were more the 50s. But there were also the Hoxton mob. There were another one. And there was an Italian family called the Silesi. Maybe they weren't Italian. I can't remember. There was a couple of other gangs that were very prevalent through the 30s, 40s and 50s. So I sort of started reading up about them. They're quite fascinating. And then that sort of had a look at the story and the synopsis of Richard and how that would maybe work with gang families and those familial relationships. And then those real standard themes of manipulation, ambition, sort of a lack of empathy, a lack of anything that sort of hinders you from getting to your goal, the ruthlessness that's a part of that story as well. And it kind of worked. And then it's just the aesthetics of the 1940s. You know, what does it look like? You know, those rolls, the hair rolls, the red lipstick, the fedoras. You know, you always, as a director, want it to look aesthetically interesting. And that adds another element to it, because I always believe that costume is as much a part of the character as anything else. So, and then we popped it into the amphitheatre with sort of its exposed brick and everything, and it just worked. So that was long-winded, but there it is.
No, that was perfect.
Absolutely fantastic, because we had actually spoken, Stephen and I were speaking just before we brought you guys online, about how Shakespeare is timeless and can be easily picked up and put in different eras, because... Yeah. Just finding those connections, which you've just described absolutely perfectly.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you'd base it today and have the New Zealand police come and arrest the gangs because they've got their gang patches on stage.
Actually, now you're talking. Oh, yep. Okay,
there you go.
So 2026 season.
So tell us a little bit about how you got into directing or your arts journey. Take us way back. Where did it all begin?
I went to university in Waikato, and they had a very, very, well, this is back in the 1700s, and they had a very sort of drama course that they were offering. And I sort of started to take drama down there and then applied for drama schools, got into performing arts school, Unitech, back in the day, did a diploma of acting for screen and theatre, you know, sort of did the whole rounds of auditions and ads and, you know, the Zenas and the Herks and the Shakes and the what's that other, Shorten Street, that's all right, all of those, you know, as a jobbing actor does in New Zealand, and was sometimes asked, as you do, to direct other people's shows, you know, as you do the lighting for their shows and you direct them, or you come along and you pass commentaries. So sort of got into it that way. I've always had a passion for Shakespeare, and I've directed another season. It was, I think, 2018, so pre-COVID, Macbeth, which had Meg as Lady Macbeth, and absolutely loved the process, loved the whole idea of directing a show that isn't just about great stories. There's beautiful poetry, there's incredible characters, there's I don't know, we don't often, and as life goes on and things become more and more colloquial, we don't have a reason to speak the way people speak or spoke it back then. And it's I just think it sort of delivers a whole package, and then you place that story in a more contemporary context, and all of a sudden something kind of really cool happens. I performed in Shakespeare here a couple of times as well. I played Lady Macbeth a couple of years before Meg did, and have sort of circled around Shoreside over the last sort of 10 to 12 years, dipped out. I love that they are supporters of Shakespeare. I was gutted when Pop-Up Globe, you know, didn't quite make it all the way through. I think there's an audience here for it, as is evidenced by, you know, we get some really good audience numbers here. We've got people that just keep coming back. We've got people that bring their families, their little kids. They might only make it through the first 3 acts, but they're here and they're embracing it. So yeah, and that's sort of where I sort of slot myself in there.
Right.
I love that. They might only make it through the first 3 acts.
It happened.
And tell us a little bit more about working with this team and this cast. What have they been like on this journey? How much input do they have into how you've created it?
Yeah, I love actors, and being an actor myself, I love actors that bring ideas to the table, even if they don't work. I love people who come up and say, hey, I've been thinking about this. Susie Sampson, who plays Lady Margaret, Queen Margaret, she is desperately upset by the reigning York family because they've murdered her whole family, and she's basically sort of spiraled down to a madness, and Susie talks about, or Lady Margaret talks about her family, talks about the death of her sons, and Susie came to rehearsal one day with a photo of her son, and she started sort of she incorporated it into the scene, and that took her to, you know, to a place that really worked for the character in terms of loss and sadness and bitterness and anger, all of the things. And it's just, I love that people can bring that to storytelling. So this crew have been great at doing that. I think the cast in full is about 38 characters, almost 40 characters. We write down to 15 actors who play, some of who play multiple characters. We've left Chris just with Richard because I think he's busy enough. A really lovely crew of very experienced actors. Meg, for example, is an experienced actor. Chris has performed in about 3 or 4, 5 Shakespeares. Down to Gigi. Gigi is this is the first time she's done Shakespeare with us. They are still at school at Carmel College, along with Sophia, who plays her the older prince
Prince Edward. They play the two young brothers, and they are at Carmel College, 15 years old. So there's a wide gamut, and that's what I really love about community theatre is that you'll have newbies who are just sort of giving it a go up to people who just keep coming back because they love doing it and they have some real experience, and you get an absorption of experience into the less experienced people who love the experience of just being part of a collective. It's an awesome idea, and they're a great crew, a really, really lovely crew.
And how do you find, because you mentioned Susie, but Susie and Meg, of course, are experienced directors as well. So, you know, how do you find directing directors?
I mean, maybe it's just those two. I don't know. It's been really, really easy. I've worked with Meg before. I haven't worked with Susie before. But honestly, I think they bring to it, independent thought. When a director or when somebody who does direct is playing a particular character, I think directors just love to get in there, get amongst it. And those two get amongst just their character. And they're freed up to a certain degree because they can just, it's all about Liz for Meg or it's all about Margaret for Susie. So it gives you sort of a little bit more time to be selfish. Whereas a director, you're kind of looking at everything. And they come to the play and they bring their experience and they bring ideas and they bring all of that sort of stuff. And I think as a director working with other directors, you kind of got to put the ego aside and go, okay, what is working here? What's not working here? I'm all about a collective. I don't come to the party with all the ideas. I don't know everything. I wasn't particularly familiar with the play. And I've got other members of the cast who are really into the Plantagenets, love the history, will always correct me about what character is where and how and who was their brother and auntie and sister and uncle, because that gets a little confusing as well. So I really rely on people's enthusiasm and love and desire to contribute to the wider sort of story making.
Yeah.
So I'm absolutely loving it.
And what's next on the horizon for you? When you pack this one away, what's next for 2025?
Oh, 2025, a big break, a really big break. I think to put it into context, we auditioned this in August. So right. We've been working on this for months. I'm a full-time, I work full-time as well because acting doesn't pay the bills or directing, fortunately. We started in August. We had, I think, cast by mid-September, and we've been rehearsing 2 to 3 days a week since then, basically. So, and then you kind of get to this point where we open in 2 weeks, so we go into a really full-on tech rehearsal. We have a tech rehearsal outside in the amphitheatre, and we also have a tech rehearsal inside for our indoor performances. Or if it rains off, now in this instance, if it rains off, we go inside. We simply pack up and move inside, so it never gets called off. So there are those sort of quite intense tech rehearsals which need to service different aspects of the tech ability. We don't have a full lighting rig inside, for example. It has to be completely movable. So the tech week can be quite intense as well. So then we have a long season, really, 24 shows. So that is quite a long one for community theatre. And then everybody packs out and goes and sleeps for a week. And then thinks about the next one. I don't have anything planned for 2025 in terms of just getting through this one. But I'll get itchy again, Something will come up. Someone will give me a ring, drop me a line and go, hey, have you thought about?
We forget the pain just to bring in the magic and do it again.
Yeah, that's right. It's like childbirth.
Yeah, exactly. Brilliant, Kath. Where can people go to get tickets and all of that sort of important stuff?
Yeah, okay. So you can come into the Pump House and get them directly from the box office, but it's really way more reliable if you can get online, get onto the website, I think it's pumphouse.co.nz. It's a super user-friendly website to use. Brings up all the dates and the days, tells you what's available, a couple of synopses there as well. You can also go onto the Shoreside Facebook page or Instagram page, and we have all the details there. But Pump House just gives you the links right through to the booking, so best place to go.
Fabulous. Well, we wish you all the best for your season and hope to get along. on a sunshiny day so that we can enjoy the amphitheatre. And I'll bring a cushion for my bottom.
Yeah, bring a cushion. Bring a cushion. But and prepare to be wowed by some of the fight scenes.
Can't wait. Have some fun with your cast for the rest your day. Thanks, Anne.
Now, Macbeth has been mentioned a few times during this interview, and I have another favourite, and it is the song Dancing in Blues, which was, I think, originally recorded by Cleo Lane, which is the version we're about to play, but I do believe Manhattan Transfer had a version as well. But here is Cleo Lane with Dancing in Blues.
Said an apparition shall never vanquished be until, said the apparition, great Burnham would to Hardon's name, hill shall come against him. Mac said that will never be, that never be. I will not be afraid of death or pain till Burnham Forest comes to Dunsinane. And marching with his army, came toward Burnham Wood. A Macbeth awaited in his castle, and Malcolm said, let every soldier hew him down a bough and bear it before him. A Macbeth that day was heard to say, I will not be afraid of death or pain till Burnham Forest comes to Dunsinane. Listen to a servant, I looked toward Burnham and anon, said the wretched servant, methought the wood began to move. Lay a seed come, and I say a moving grove. Then quoth the Scot, the spirit said, fear not, to Burnham wood to come to Dunsinane, and now a wood comes to warm Dunsinane. Said another apparition, Macbeth, beware that doth beware. Said another apparition, be bloody bold and resolute, and laugh to scorn the power of man, for none of woman born can harm Macbeth. Doth this disarm Macbeth? You said, swords I smile at weapons, laugh to scorn, a brandish fire man the sober. In a battle, sighted Macduff, who said, despair. And then to put it my way, now's the time for you to be a warrior. I really wasn't born, it was a Caesarian. Macbeth is said to have lost his head, but he never was afraid of death or pain. To Burnham Forest came to Dunsinane.
Wow, that was a great catch up with our dear friends from Shoreside Theatre.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I'm kind of thinking, I'm not really a history's Shakespeare fan, but I like the sound of Richard III. I might actually be up to 2.5 hours of sitting still.
Well, interesting. The Taming of the Shrew, I don't think I've ever seen, and the idea of seeing the lightheartedness got me. So we might have to do one each and catch up with them. It's just getting the weather crystal ball out and picking the right night.
Definitely, but then maybe, or risking getting a door sale.
Yeah, true. I love what Kath said, though, about the technical side of just prepping in case they do have to move it inside. I hadn't even thought of things like lighting and all of that. It is quite an exercise, but something they've obviously done for so many years, they've got it down to a fine art.
Definitely.
Well, Stephen, I'm actually loving finding songs that are somehow related to Shakespeare, and it's quite interesting how many people have either been influenced by or have written specifically a song about a character. But this one's kind of, I think, about all kings. So next up, we've got Elton John's The King Must die.
Jester playing Shakespeare. Round your throne room floor, while the juggler's act is danced upon the crown that you once wore. Afraid your courtiers cannot be called best friends. See those hide your troubles, wear those hats to cry. Bombers and resin toys to sing, and the king must die. Sailors, take my word and go, but tell the ostler that his name was the very first they chose. And if my hands are stained forever, and the altar should refuse me, yeah, would you let me in? Would you let me in? Did I cry sanctuary? See those had your troubles, widows had to cry. While Mason Rosen voiced a sing, and the king must die. Yeah, the king must die. Stop playing Shakespeare round your throne room floor, while the juggler's act is danced upon the crown that you once wore. The king is dead.
Well, now I'm definitely getting carried away because, of course, you know what it's like, Stephen. As soon as you start looking, the more you find. So this next song is about someone we haven't discussed tonight, actually, and that is Ophelia. So in 1975, the band had a hit called Ophelia, and as the title would suggest, it concentrates on one of Shakespeare's most tragic figures. It's got lyrics, ashes of laughter and ghost is clear. Why do the best things always disappear? Like Ophelia, please darken my door. The band looked at the madness and the ultimate demise of the song's titular character to talk about the neuroses of a particular hard-to-reach girlfriend. So here they go. This is the band with Ophelia. Well, now I'm going to stop while I'm ahead because
that was a great show, and I'm sure there is more happening out there across Aotearoa. Yeah,
definitely.
So we are looking for people for the next couple of weeks. Maybe you've got the New Zealand Fringe in Wellington's coming up, so you know, maybe you've got something there coming up or something on the horizon that you want to promote.
Click us an email, info@kickarts.org.nz, and we'll book you in.
And if you're a new muso,
yeah,
send us your music. You know, we prefer to play Kiwi music, unless, of course, we're having a specific show that we're talking about, or tonight when we had, because we're talking Romeo and Juliet, play something from Baz Luhrmann's soundtrack. But, you know, flick us your tracks so that we can, you know, this is a great way to have a marketing chance to be able to say, I've been on the radio, if you're a new performer. Mm,
absolutely. Well, have a fabulous week. We will catch you next week.
We're going to go out with one last Shakespeare-inspired hit, and this is Kate Bush with Blow Away.
Make sure you go out and
kick some arts.
Sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, blah, blah.